You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
Today on the On Inquirer podcast, Michael Tulip, On Inquirer basketball analyst, joins us to give his thoughts on Illinois' 87-84 overtime victory over Nebraska. What good did he get out of that game? And of course, what concerns does he have after Illinois' late collapse that made the game go into overtime? Maybe fortunate it even went into overtime with how they played towards the end of that game. But what Illinois can learn from that close game experience against Tominaga, Mast, and a Nebraska team that's playing really, really well right now. What he thinks about a really big game in East Lansing as Illinois has rest leading into the game at Michigan State on Saturday, a CBS national game with top five, top six Big Ten implications and potentially implications in the Big Ten race for Illinois. And we also had a fun exercise. We tried to put together the all Big Ten teams midway through the season, and there are some fun conversations to be had with this one. Some interesting conversations to be had with this one, particularly how many Illinois players get on the first team. Is Terrence Shannon a first team member? Where do we put Coleman Hawkins in this group? But it's fun to kind of go up and down the all Big Ten first, second, and third teams. And I actually changed Mike's mind. We kind of talked through some things about some players that he picked, and I thought it was a fun exercise. So we'll have that later on in the podcast as well. But coming up next, you hear from Michael Tulip, Illini Inquirer basketball analyst. Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals make eating better every day easy. So wherever tomorrow takes you, be ready with pre-prepared, chef-crafted, and dietitian-approved meals from Factor delivered right to your door. You'll have over 35 different options a week to choose from, including keto, calorie smart, vegan and veggie, and my favorite guys, Protein Plus. And there's even more to enjoy with over 55 nutrition-packed add-ons that help make your weekly meal planning even more delicious. So what are you waiting for? Get started today and have a feel-good week of meals ready to go. Great part about Factor, they're two-minute meals. So you fuel up fast with Factor's restaurant-quality meals that are ready to heat and eat wherever you are. Plus, they have snacks, smoothies, and more, so you can discover a wide variety of easy options for the entire day, like breakfast, midday bites, and more. And we've done the math. Sign up and save. Factor is less expensive than takeout, and every meal is dietitian approved to be nutritious and delicious. Factor is the perfect solution if you're looking for fast, upscale options done easily. No prep, no mess meals. Factor meals are 100% ready to heat and eat, so there's no prepping, cooking, or cleanup needed. So head to factormeals.com/Illini50 and use code Illini50 to get 50% off your first box and two free wellness shots per box while subscription is active. That's code Illini50 at factormeals.com/Illini50 to get 50% off your first box and two free wellness shots per box while subscription is active. It's that time of week to catch up with our guy, Michael Tulip, Illini Inquirer basketball analyst. Just caught up with you a few days ago, Mike, but we had a really entertaining game. Yet again, Illinois goes into overtime with Nebraska. We will talk about some of the concerns that come from that, but just like the Indiana game, they find a way to win a game that you didn't necessarily feel completely great about, Mike, especially after that collapse. So what was the good that you saw of them being able to pull out a win there?
Well, I think we've talked about this team's experience, how old they are, and in those types of moments, I don't think that they get rattled. Now, there's certain things that I think contribute to blowing a lead like that. The good was your offensive rebounding, because I'm not sure you win that game in regulation if you don't rebound like they did. And I think between the last 4 minutes of regulation and the overtime, I think you had, I'll call it six offensive rebounds. I think there were four, but you drew two fouls on crashing the glass. Hawkins got one, I think, with a minute 55 left in regulation, and then Guerrier had one to start off the overtime. And so the reason why that was so important and needed to have those extended offensive possessions, because you were not getting stops. I think the less possessions that Nebraska had, the better, because they were scoring virtually every time down, especially in the overtime. So the fact that you were able to compete like that on the glass with some ugly defensive possessions, some ugly offensive possessions, when you had a 40-second offensive possession, like game clock, after Bryce Williams hit that three to make it 72-65, you go from, I think, 312 to 233 because of your offensive rebounds. Now, if you come down, get a quick shot up, they come down, like, they were scoring every time down. So you needed to have as much time on your side as possible, and they did that with their rebounding.
All right, the flip side of that, what the hell happened in that final 3 minutes, Mike? Both offensively and defensively, as you said, they couldn't stop anybody and they couldn't put any points on the board.
Well, to me, a lot of the talk after the game was offensively. And I think the defensive side of the ball was just as big of a culprit, if not more, in my opinion. Because look at the Bryce Williams three. You have Rink Mask rolling to the rim. Quincy Guerrier, with the ball coming towards him, is tagging in. That should be the backside guy, not the guy that has the ball dribbling towards him. So he's guarding Alec, I think, in the corner. They go into a dribble handoff with Williams. Now it's Guerrier on the switch with Hawkins, and Guerrier's tagging in the paint. And so when he's trying to recover out to Williams to switch up, he can't get there in time, gives up a three. So that was the first possession. And then, you know, you go down and then you have a 40-second offensive possession like I just talked about, where you're getting two offensive rebounds. Now you settled for two threes. Damas got a point-blank layup that he missed. Mm-hmm. There was some contact, but point-blank layup that he missed. So you come down this next time, they get a rebound. Mass outlets it to Tominaga. You have Tominaga dribbling up the court. Rogers is kind of riding him up the side. And Damask and Guerrier are hugging their man on the weak side. Guerrier doesn't even see him. I mean, Tominaga dribbles right down the paint, and Guerrier is, I think, still had Alec and was kind of just looking the other way, following him out to the perimeter, where you got to be in those gaps and build walls so that Tominaga can't come down Broadway for a layup. So right there, you're talking about two mistakes. And then, you know, you have the foul on Mass on the next possession. And then Terrence Shannon has a turnover that leads to a Bryce Williams run out for a foul. That's 72-71. And then the inbounding as well. So there was a lot there. I think on the offensive side of the ball, you wanted to attack matchups. At one point, Nebraska showed they were switching 1 through 5. So you said, hey, Rogers, go set a screen for Damask. Let's get Damask on Mast and let's go to work. Damas doesn't really make him pay. He's in the middle of the floor. They're gapped up. He swings it to Shannon, who takes a three. And then the next time down, they want to run it again because they think that Nebraska's switching 1 through 5. And then, you know, they just keep their matchups. Mass just kind of skinnies up, gets under, and then Gary is able to get under and level off Shannon. So, you know, the offense looked a little bit disjointed and stagnant. Mm-hmm. But the defense, in my opinion, you're not in that position to go into overtime if you're getting stops. If you get stops, that game's over. And they didn't do that.
It also felt like there were some moments in the second half, Mike. They go on the big runs, 47-40, and you felt like you had some chances to really, you know, step on the throats. And kudos to Tominaga and Mass for making some big shots. But then there was 61-55, and I think you missed six or seven shots in a row. And it's like, you know, you're able to get some stops to kind of keep that lead, but I felt like those were some big moments too, where they just didn't capitalize for whatever reason. But for most of that first, I don't know, 36 minutes, Mike, I felt like what they were doing, their process, was pretty good. Tominaga and Mass had pretty good games, and Illinois didn't make shots. So the first 36 minutes, I wasn't too bothered, and I felt like at some point they were going to pull away, and they did. They just weren't able to kind of step on Nebraska's throat there at the end.
No, and that's why you got to be careful with a team like Nebraska, because 4 minutes is a lot of time. Three and a half minutes is a lot of time when you have Tominaga, when you have Mass that can step out, Williams that can step out. Like, that lead can evaporate in an instant. And we talked about it before the Nebraska game, how combustible this team is offensively, and how even when you're up 72-62, you know, the mindset can't be, hey, we have breathing room. The mindset has to be, can we push this to 16? Can we get like one more stop? Because if you got one more stop, you won in regulation.
Yep.
And that was it. And they just dialing in and locking in ends that game. But no, I think on the whole, I'm talking about the concerns. You know, we're talking about what happened, the collapse at the end of regulation. But where I'm coming from, I think you got to be happy to get that win and get out of there with a win.
That, you know, and Indiana, right? Like, Indiana and Nebraska, yeah, those felt like they should have been losses, and they weren't.
Sure. No, I mean, we'll talk about the Big Ten race, but these are the ones you just got to find a way, pull them out. Now, they're definitely making it more difficult on themselves with the way things are closing out. But you have to be happy to come out of here with a win. Where I'm coming from talking about this is more of a macro level. When you talk about going – I talk about that transition defense with Guerrier. You can't do that at Michigan State. Right, Michigan State's going to be coming right at you in transition. You know, not being able to locate shooters at times, fighting through, like, all that stuff matters big picture if you want to win a Big Ten championship, if you want to make some noise in March. Like, you can't, especially late game, you can't have, you know, you can't, because I will say, you get a stop, right? How about the stop that you get in overtime? Because even overtime started and there were two straight possessions that Nebraska scored. And then it wasn't until you got a stop that Coleman Hawkins is able to run out and push the break, attack Mask, get into the paint, kick out to Guerrier, three. Now you go up four. That's what I'm talking about. If you get one of those stops at the under four, then maybe you can get out and allow yourself to get easier baskets, yep, as opposed to having to break down in the half court against a set defense that clogs gaps like that. That's really hard.
Is this just a cap tip to Keisei Tominaga breaking out of a slump? I mean, what could Illinois have done better against him?
He's incredible. I think he's learned throughout his basketball career how quickly he has to get his shot off, and I think that surprises some guys, where you feel like you're in his airspace, but it's 0.1 seconds he can get that thing off, and you're just not close enough. I mean, he had one in overtime where Ty Rogers was literally, draped all over him and hit it. But we talked about this a little bit last year, where when you have a lineup with the amount of size that, you know, that that Illinois has, you know, when you put Terrence Shannon on a opposing point guard, I think it really, really hurts those teams, because now you can't quite get to the spots that you want, start offense. It spreads you out. Like, that is why Terrence is such a weapon defensively. But guys that are 6'6", guys that are 6'7", even if they have foot speed, it's really hard to navigate off-ball screens. We saw that last year at Penn State. You played three games against Penn State, Andrew Funk hit 14 threes. Mm-hmm. And you know, so that is kind of what you have to live with. That's why you have to be completely tuned in to helping, when to help, when not to help. And, you know, you can't just assume that because you're bigger, you can close out and recover on those type of guys. They just have those quick triggers. So, like, the rules on shooters, if you don't want a Tominaga or Funk to get loose, there's three things that you have to keep in mind, right? Off ball actions, transition defense, and when there is an offensive rebound, you better find where the hell that guy's at, because mm-hmm. those are the easiest ones, the offensive rebound, kickouts. So just moving forward, Illinois is fortunate because there just aren't many Tominaga and Funks running around.
Right.
So I don't think it's like a problem down the road. I just think when you play teams like these, you got to do your best to try to limit those guys.
Yeah. Who should be your star of the game for Illinois? I mean, Coleman, 27-5 with a couple steals. Ty Rogers, you know, 14 rebounds, 8 points, 3 steals, 2 blocks. Who is your star of the game there for Illinois?
It's, I think you're splitting hairs, but yeah. I would say Ty Rogers. And the reason I say it is you see what his activity and aggression leads to for this team. I mean, this year, when he has two or more offensive rebounds in a game, they're 12-2. Hmm. When he scores eight or more points, they're 9-0. So like, he adds another wrinkle to this team, and he's doing exactly what he's asked to do and some. And that's why it's so fun to watch him, because of his activity, because of what he values. And then if you listen to Fred Hoiberg after the game, he's sitting up there like, he's a hard, tough guard. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if you play off of him, now you got one of the best offensive rebounders in the league with a free run to the basket. But if you play on him, you leave more space for these other players. So, you know, it's I like the way they – we talked about this, but I like the way that they've put him at the five and had him play out those short roles. What a pass he made to Coleman Hawkins on that short roll, where it almost looked like a design play where he comes out of a short roll and immediately catches it, knows they're going to have that low hold on the bottom. Tominaga's up, skip it right to the corner because that's where the open man's going to be. Hawkins hits a three. Like, he just did so much in that game. And Coleman did too. Coleman, yeah. You know, his activity as well. I mean, we've just seen when he's dialed in, when he's confident, when he's not hesitating, catch and shoot. Like, both those guys are a big reason for Illinois' success this year. And they were, you know, they're a big reason why Illinois won that game the other night.
It's going to be fun to see. We're going to do an all Big Ten team, which is a really difficult exercise midway through the year here. It's going to be fun to see where we put Coleman here. But over the last 14 games, he's averaging 14.2 points on 42% from three, 7 rebounds, and 2.2 steals per game. It's just been fun, man. I know we talk about him all the time, but it's been fun to see this rise by him.
No, it's been really cool to see. I think anytime you have a guy that comes back, there's just a different psychology to it. You've gone to the combine, you had some interviews, you know, you start to have a little bit more self-assurance when you come back to the college game. And I think we've seen that with Terrence this year as well, where you kind of come back, you know who you are. And again, I've gone back and watched that Marquette game. I've gone back and watched games earlier in the year. Coleman was hurt, man.
Yeah.
He couldn't move it like he is now defensively. Things were a little bit, I think, off kilter offensively. But the more that they've started to figure out, like, I think the booty ball and back downs and stuff have really helped Coleman, because now you can get more of a sense of where your shots are coming from. Like, for him, it can kind of come from anywhere. But how many times have you seen Coleman go into a step back three?
It's all step into threes. It's all in rhythm, whether it's the corner, top of the key, those seem to be his two spots. They're all step into threes.
Yeah, I mean, percentages are predicated on level of difficulty. Now, not everyone can be Steph Curry, or just, you know, come hell or high water, he's going to shoot 40% plus, no matter what the degree of difficulty is. But for most guys, the more catch-and-shoot opportunities you get, Quincy Guerrier, like we've seen, and the more rhythm that you have with where those shots are coming, how many are coming per game, you can start to up the percentages. And we like, it's never looked broken for Coleman.
Yeah,
it's just kind of dialing him in and having him focus on, hey, what are the good ones? And if I shoot good ones, I'll make a high percentage. And that's just the three-point shooting. I mean, everything else he does, we've talked a ton about, and he's having a heck of a year, man.
Yeah. Kind of goes into the Terrence Shannon conversation. There were some great moments. I mean, two huge threes to get that 10-point lead in the second half. I thought he did a really nice job chasing Tominaga and fighting through screens, over screens. But Tominaga's just had a ridiculous day. But then there was some decision-making, I thought, late. It seemed like he, you know, took some out-of-rhythm ones. What did you think of Terrence Shannon? What's his next step? Like, does he feel in rhythm yet to you?
Not entirely. I think he has another gear, both offensively and defensively. What's been really interesting about since he's come back is, if you want to talk about teams that play like crazy, shrink the floor, gap help, he's played 4 out of the 5 since he's come back. I mean, it's Rutgers, it's Nebraska, it's Northwestern, and it's Indiana. Like, all of them are just shrink the floor, we're not giving you driving gaps. And you take that away from a guy like Terrence Shannon that likes to get downhill, that likes to get to the paint. Now, I thought there were a couple opportunities where he could have. He made the right play in overtime. He got, you know, a rip drive going down with his left hand, or actually this might have been the end of regulation, or I think about a minute and a half left. Left hand driving down the middle of the paint. Tominaga's the helper. He's still got Gary on his hip. I thought he could have gone up with his left, but he makes a good play with Tominaga helping and low holding for a driving kick to the corner to Gary. Gary just misses it, but I think he's still getting his feet under him. Ohio State was was a step in the right direction for sure, but I think as time goes on, that's the hope, right? Mm-hmm. As February will be really important, try to get him completely back on track so that you can make a run at this thing in March.
All right, huge matchup at Michigan State, a quad one opportunity, and that's not going anywhere. Michigan State is firmly a quad one opportunity. National television here, Mike, but most importantly, to stay, you know, in this race with Purdue, with Wisconsin. This is where Big Ten championships runs can happen. But they haven't won a marquee game here in a while. So what do you think of this matchup after Illinois narrowly escaped against Michigan State at home with a 71-68 victory last month?
Yeah, I think you look at what Michigan State's done since that game. They're 5-1 since that game with their lone loss coming in Madison. And I think this is one of your toughest games of the year. I really do. With the way that Michigan State's playing, with what's at stake coming into the back half of this Big Ten schedule, going to East Lansing on an afternoon on CBS, like, place is going to be absolutely rocking. I mean, you cannot bring your A-minus game.
Yeah.
For this game, truly, I think this is a game where you want to see guys kind of put it together on both ends. And not only are they 5-1 in this stretch over these last six games, but Malik Hall, man, seven straight games in double figures, and we've talked about it for years, just his potential. And outside of Walker and Hogard and Joey Hauser last year, is just, hey, if they can find something with him, if he can be aggressive, then he takes that Michigan State team to another level, and that's exactly what he's done. But you go into the Breslin, they play Michigan State basketball. Yeah. There, I mean, they haven't, their last loss there was December 5th to Wisconsin. They guard at the Breslin. They run their offense with their floppy actions and their ball screens, and then you know what they do? They run.
Yeah,
they run faster in the Breslin. They get out in transition, and that's, to me, that is the area of this game for Illinois, because it's an area where I've seen like a little bit of a slide since the beginning of the year, locating guys in transition, getting all the way back in transition. You let them get easy buckets, it could be a tough one up in East Lansing. But on the flip side of that, you come out of there with a win. You're talking about a quad one win, continue to bolster your resume. And you need all these as you make a kind of the stretch run.
Yeah, after their 4-5 start, Mike, they're 10-3. Their three losses are all on the road: Northwestern, Illinois, Wisconsin. All really good teams. They beat Baylor. They beat Indiana State at home. So Illinois certainly one of their better opponents they'll play since then at home. But man, you said, like, what are some of your keys? You said it, kind of transition defense there. What else is going to be key against this Spartans team from what you've seen from them lately?
I think you have to be good in ball screens with your communication. Like, you can't be busting switches and then having Tyson Walker get going. You can't be busting switches and have Jaden Akins start making threes. You got to try to keep Hogard out of the paint. And then, just like I think Ty Rogers did in the first matchup, I want to see how they guard him this time, because that did not work for them the first time around. Whether it was Sissoko, Cooper, he really hurt them. So maybe they try to play him more straight up, try to keep him off the glass as well, and maybe that opens things up for a Taren Shannon and for other guys to find some crevices and find some driving lanes. So that's really what I'm looking for. But like I said, there's no question this is a tough challenge.
Mike, is Purdue catchable in the Big Ten?
Can you catch them?
Yeah.
Sure. Do I think it's likely? No. The issue is you're a game and a half back right now.
Right.
And if in a lot of these races, these Big Ten races, come down to schedule. And for Purdue, you're talking about a team that from this point on has 6 home games.
Mm-hmm.
And Illinois has 5 road games. So that already doesn't work in your favor. Now, is it possible? Yes, it's possible. But I mean, you're talking about in these last, what, 9 games of the conference schedule? You got to be near perfect.
And can I tell you their next 5 games?
Go ahead.
Home against Indiana, home against Minnesota, at Ohio State, home against Rutgers, at Michigan. Right? So like their last 3, home against Michigan State, they're still home. At Illinois, home against Wisconsin. Like they've done their difficult work in the Big Ten so far.
Yeah, no, they have. And they're playing really well.
Yeah.
And that shouldn't be something for Illinois fans or people that watch Illinois where it's like a failure if you don't catch Purdue or if you drop one of these next 5 games that, you know, season's over because you can't. I mean, Purdue is one of probably top 2, if not the best team in college basketball.
Yeah, how far Illinois has come as a program if that's a failure in some
sense. Right. And they have, just like when Kofi was here, they have the biggest guardrail in college basketball. I mean, every single game, you're not worried about, man, it's Purdue. Maybe they'll have an off shooting night. Maybe they'll, you know, maybe they'll turn it over a little bit. All that stuff doesn't really matter because of what, you know, the threat that he poses both offensively and defensively. But I'll say this, go back to the game and a half, I think is really important to note. You know, it'd be one thing if you were dead even right now. It'd be one thing if the schedules were relatively the same. Some of that stuff works in Illinois' favor, but go back to 2022 when Illinois clinched a share of the Big Ten. After 11 games, they were up on Wisconsin. So when you're up, it's a little bit different to where you have a little bit of breathing room. You can have a misstep or two. If Illinois wants to do this, they cannot have a misstep.
Yeah.
And I think that's just a lot to ask with you know, some of the teams that are still left on their schedule. You still got to go to Maryland. Like there's a lot of tough ones there. But yeah, then even going back to 22, you had a game up, and then even by the end of it, you needed Nebraska and Alonzo Verge to go into Madison and get that win for you to have a chance. So
right.
If you're the team that's sitting there saying we need this, 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 and this, that makes the chances a lot less likely. Whereas Purdue, a game and a half up, they're like, hey, we legitimately control our own destiny and can go and win another Big Ten regular season title. So
yeah.
I hope for the sake of that matchup in Champaign that there is some sort of, you know, I guess consequences from that game,
right,
in terms of the Big Ten race. But I think the Big Ten race has to be on your mind if you're Illinois, but it's also all those other little things.
Yeah.
You know, closing out games, transition, because that then those wins will become a byproduct of that. But if you don't focus on those things, then there's really no point in talking about a Big Ten race.
Yeah, I agree with you. You got a lot of work to do before you get into there.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, Mike, let's try and do this exercise. We're more than midway through the Big Ten season, and we got to start thinking about the all Big Ten teams. I just think it's a great conversation, kind of gets us up to speed and gets everyone else up to speed about, you know, where we're at here. So let's try this. Let's try to project it, and let's start with the all Big Ten first team. How many no-doubters, like guys that you have no doubt are going to be first team, do you have right now?
No doubt first teams?
Yes.
Like, they'll probably be unanimous?
Well, just guys that, barring an injury, are definitely going to be on there. Because I don't know if... I mean, Jameer Young should be unanimous, but there's always a random voter.
If you want to tell, like, I think there's two guys that'll be unanimous.
Okay.
So I'll start there. I don't know if you want to ping pong this or how you want to.
No,
do
you
it.
Go ahead. You go ahead, and I'll just weigh in with what you have to say.
My first team.
Yeah.
All right. So I'll break some news here. We'll go with Zach Edey.
Zach Edey. That's a good first
pick. And then the other unanimous guy that I think will be on there is Boo Booey.
I agree with that. I think he will be, no doubt, unanimous.
I have Marcus Damask on my.
Is he your third guy, or is this you're doing your team?
I think though I just had those two unanimous, and then you can throw these next three in really any order you want.
Because if I had to do Big Ten Player of the Year vote right now, we get three picks. I know his team's not very good, but I'd probably have Jameer Young three.
He was on there for me.
Okay.
He was my next guy. He was the next guy on my list.
Sure.
And then this is kind of where I struggled a little bit.
This is difficult.
It is.
Circumstance, right?
I think there's probably...
I got three guys.
Three guys. I think it's AJ Storr, Terrence Shannon, and Tyson Walker.
Okay.
Are my three. Now... I went with AJ Storr.
I don't blame you. I think
and the reason for it is I just think with the Big Ten games that Terrence has missed, and then like the Big Ten games where he was trying to like find himself afterwards, is, you know, I think hurts his case a little bit. Now if this were mid December, he would be the third unanimous guy.
Yeah.
Which
you could, like, here's the thing, like, we aren't told whether to weigh Big Ten play more, but I do think it should. I think Big Ten play Big Ten play should matter more. Like, I put more weight into the conference stats, which is why I like that you have Marcus Damask on the first team, to be honest with you. And it's hard to keep off a Wisconsin guy. I agree with that. But Terrence has missed like four or five Big Ten games. And he hasn't been great during Big Ten play. He's been good. He's still in my conversation in that first team, but I don't blame you for not having him on there. That's going to be my toughest call right now is this fourth and fifth spots between Damask, Storr, Walker, Shannon. I think you can get Braden Smith into the conversation as well, but I don't blame you putting Storr. I would probably edge Storr right now.
Yeah. But again, those two guys, like, I think Terrence could make a run at this.
Oh yeah.
I think AJ Storr, if you watch that Purdue game, he was sitting on the bench at the end of the game. He took a bad shot, guard took him out, and they rolled with Blackwell at the end of that game. So these could be guys who go in two separate directions to finish out this season, and I could totally see Terrence finding his way into the first team with Marcus.
Yeah.
Now, whether or not the voting shakes out that way, I don't know. But just with all things considered, with Storr bringing Wisconsin, being a big reason why Wisconsin's where they're at right now, I gave the nod to Storr. But you can put Terrence right at the top for second team for me.
If I had to guess where the rest of my media brethren would pick, I think Edey, Bowie, Jameer Young are no doubters. I think Walker would be on this first team, and I think Storr would be on this first team. I don't know if an Illinois guy is on the first team right now because I just don't know if he – like, Domask's non-conference numbers drag him down a little bit. So when you look at the leaderboard, it's not as much. But then you go to conference play, and he's fourth in the Big Ten in scoring. He's 10th in assists. He's been huge for Illinois. And then Shannon, I think people are going to be uncomfortable voting for him, to be honest with you. So I think that's going to play, and he hasn't played nearly to his All-American level that he was before this. So can we start the second team with Terrence Shannon, though?
We can. And my last point on Damask is – I could totally see a situation where he is second team media, first team coaches.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times with coaches, when they do these, it's you're thinking back to how a player made you feel in prep. And
who else gets the biggest boost because of that? Well,
Zach Edey gets a quote unquote boost.
Does Braden, does Coleman, are those other guys that coaches might be more likely to vote for?
Higher. I think Terrence is another guy that I think belongs on there. Bowie is up there. But my second team, I had Terrence. I had Braden Smith.
Yeah.
I
was thinking about him first team, to be honest.
Yeah, he was another guy. You could throw him in there with Walker, Tyson Walker, who's on my second team. You ready for this one?
Okay, yeah, this is where it gets interesting, because I think that in top eight, no doubt. No, like that top eight for me was easy. It's just like, where are you putting the guy ranked 4 through 7 or 8? Like that was the discussion right there. This is where the next 12 guys to me is just pick your flavor. I think there's like 12 or 13 guys, and you just pick your flavor here. So go for it.
Brooks Barnheiser.
He was in conversation for me. I love him.
Yeah.
I love him.
And I think what people don't understand about Brooks is, obviously, you know, he's been good offensively this year. He's been good defensively as well. And I saw something the other day where 14 points, 6 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, like, hasn't been done since 05-06 in the Big Ten Conference, which is pretty incredible considering the talent that's come through this conference. So I have Brooks on there. And then
I want to share a story. Some of the Northwestern students were sitting there going, does Northwestern get 2 first team All Big Ten guys? And I turned to him and I go, I can promise you, as an All Big Ten voter, he won't be first team, but he's going to be in the second or third team.
Yeah.
And I had him as my first third team guy. So I was really debating who I put second or third team here. And I got 2 other guys I had under consideration, but I'll let you go first.
Oh, God, this is where it gets really tough, man. And I usually – and this is based off of, I think, the surprising year that they're having. And I think he's been this guy has kind of been a victim of being on bad teams throughout his Big Ten career. But I got Dawson Garcia on the second team.
Don't hate it. He's a good player. Because he's no longer the great stats, bad team guy, right? Like, it's a mediocre
great
team.
Stats, surprisingly
competitive, yeah.
Competitive team guy.
All right. Do you want to know who I had over Brooks and Dawson?
Yes.
I had Rink Mast. I love his game. I love the impact he's made on that team, because we knew Wiltshire, Tobinaga, these guys can go off, but they needed someone to give him more space, someone to really attack the basket. Like, Derek Walker was a really good player. He was not this kind of offensive hub that Rink Mast has become. And Nebraska's, they're probably going to finish as a top half Big Ten team. And while Tominaga and Wiltshire are kind of the flamethrowers, Mast is just that consistent piece. He's their leading rebounder, leading assist guy, leading scorer. So I had Rink Mast on my second team.
Yeah, he was – That was really the guy I was debating there, because I had Mast on my third team.
The other guy, and maybe it's my bias showing, I had Coleman.
Yeah.
Like, that was kind of the next tier. I had Barnheiser. You know, Garcia was one of my top third team guys. Rink Mast and Coleman. I just love what all those guys bring to their team.
Yeah, I had Coleman. It was between all three of them.
So you got Coleman third team?
Yeah, I have Coleman third team.
All right. So I think we got this tiered similarly.
And now that I'm looking at it on paper, I do not like it.
No? Which one?
I do not like Garcia's second team.
All right. So you can switch. We haven't submitted our votes yet. Who would you put in there? I just think Rink and Coleman are...
I know.
I think I'd rather have those guys on my team.
Yeah,
but I Dawson's agree. A good player.
It's like, I honestly don't want to... You almost feel like there's bias involved, but I do think it would be super objective. Like, let's put Coleman on the second team.
I think I think coaches would agree with you.
Yeah, he's been that good defensively and offensively. So I feel maybe I'll be able to sleep tonight. Yeah. Now I'll be able to sleep tonight.
Yeah, I was able to convince you there a little bit.
Who is your third team guy?
Okay. There's just a bunch of dudes that I'd feel comfortable putting in here. I am really anti great stat, bad team guy. So kudos to Kanye Clary for a great season, but I don't think he's better than Tony Perkins. Lance Jones has been so clutch. I've considered him. I would probably rather have Ace Baldwin on my team than Kanye Clary. You can make arguments, whatever, but if I had to definitely put a guy here, the Indiana posts are definitely in the conversation, Renew and Ware. So I had Renew, Khalil Ware, and Tony Perkins rounding out my team.
Okay. So I had one of those three. I chose between the Indiana bigs, which probably isn't fair, but yeah. I just feel like the season that they're having,
I agree. It was hard for me to do that. Like, that's why I'd love to put Crowell over one of those guys.
Yeah. And Wisconsin is, I think their balance is going to end up hurting them.
It always does. I don't even mention Tyler Wall in this conversation.
Yeah, I mean, Wall and Crowell, like, you know, Klesmit's been really good too.
Yeah.
But so I had Lance Jones.
Don't blame
13.
Me. Don't blame.
I just think when you look at,
how about the Missouri Valley here, Mike?
Yeah. When you look at the what Purdue was last year, which is very similar to this year, I just think Lance Jones, in addition to Braden Smith and Fletcher Loyer taking a step forward, like, he just adds another dynamic to that team, and his ability to shoot the ball and defend at a high level and play make when he needs to. I think he's definitely on there for me.
So three of our 13 all Big Ten guys are Missouri Valley transfers. Domask, your first team, Mast from Nebraska, and Lance Jones from Purdue. And Ben Creakey's in their conversation too. Like, I don't have him on here.
Creakey didn't make my all Big Ten teams, but so who are your last two?
So would you go Renew over Ware?
I went Renew over Ware just because
I had him first listed.
Ware's missed a little bit of time.
Yeah.
I don't know. Which feels crazy because Ware is probably going to be like a first round pick this year.
Correct. Correct.
But
he's a really good player. He's definitely like top five talented player in the Big Ten. I would have Tony Perkins. I love his game.
Yeah, so it was between Perkins and one other guy for me.
Hmm.
And I don't know. It's like, it's hard for me to sit there and say that Indiana doesn't deserve to have two guys on the All Big Ten team.
Yeah.
And then go and put two guys from Minnesota on the All Big Ten team. Because I just think, again, with Minnesota, like, you look at like how much Elijah Hawkins has opened things up for them.
That is a name I did not have on there, but he's been a great addition, that's for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, no, he's been awesome. He's fifth in the country in assist rate, and you can see the difference, like how that doesn't put as much strain on Dawson Garcia, and, you know, he's just opened up a lot for that team. So I put Hawkins on my third team.
Right. I don't mind it.
I'm not like 100% sure how I feel about that. But yeah, I mean, there are definitely, like, could Bruce Thornton be the last guy on the third team?
His team is not good.
Could Kamwa be on it? Like, it's just hard with where those teams are at.
I agree. I do reward players that are on winning teams. The one thing I would make the argument for Tony Perkins in the same way that I would for Marcus Domask. During Big Ten play, Perkins is averaging 18.6 a game. That's sixth in the Big Ten during that time. You know, Ware is averaging 16.2. So I would probably argue those guys over Hawkins, but
yeah.
And Iowa's got a chance still here, but that's not a great team either. So it's to leave off a Crowell or a Klesmet, Tominaga. He just hasn't been as consistent as last year. Like Tominaga, yeah, I think Tominaga was a third teamer for me.
Take Elijah out.
All right.
Because let's make the case here, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's a guy like Klesmet, Tominaga, who else did you just mention?
Perkins, Ware.
Perkins. I almost feel like.
You know, if Blake Hall was playing this way the entire season.
Yeah, okay, no kidding. that's why, yeah, to me, it almost feels weird with some of these teams. I mean, Purdue has three guys. Illinois has three guys. It's very Wisconsin for them to kind of only have one. And yeah, the one guy is like the guy that came in not from Wisconsin.
Right.
But, you know, Klesmet, I think in Big Ten play, because I'm trying to think where Klesmet is at.
Here's the thing. Wisconsin has one guy in the top 25 of scoring during conference play, and that's A.J. Store.
Yeah, because
it's right, a bunch of guys around 10. That guy's averaging 10 points per game.
So I'll say this. I think I want to go Klesmet, and the reason why is as I, you know, watching him in that Nebraska game at Nebraska, like he almost single-handedly won them that game with like his own 11-0 run. I mean, he's
averaging 12.5 points per game, 48% from three during Big Ten play.
Percent from two. And that is very, very high level. So I
don't hate it.
I think it's between Klesmet and Perkins probably, right?
Yeah. I think Ware will definitely be on one of these teams.
Ware will probably be on one too. That's just him missing a few games and then the game he comes back, they get dog walked against Penn State at home. It's just, yeah.
I think Ware will definitely could be on the second team media. over Hawkins, easily. Over Mass, over Barnheiser, like
easily.
Maybe even over Braden Smith. Just yeah, because of the numbers, how his NBA pedigree. But I think the people that made the biggest impact on the Big Ten this season are probably on this list.
I agree.
So I feel good about it.
I agree. I mean, how many transfers do we have on this list? Let's see. Klesmet, Jones, Garcia, Mass, Walker, Shannon, Store, Young, Damask. It's a decent amount of transfers.
And you know who's good at transfers? Brad Underwood.
That is a fact.
he's pretty good at this transfer thing. All right, what do we learn from that, Mike? What do we learn from
that? We learned that it's really hard, and you could see. I mean, I kind of threw it together before we hopped on here, and I think I was just like Minnesota is such like a good. I know if they still have 10 more games of conference play, and they're a pretty good story this year considering how hot Ben Johnson's seat was coming in, and you know Hawkins has done a lot for their offense for sure. But I do. That's why we have you, because you can talk me through some of it. Because I like the more that I saw it on the Excel spreadsheet, the less I liked it for some of those guys.
The one thing I would say about the Big Ten, there were some years voting for this where I struggled to find a 13th, 14th, 15th guy. On this. I don't struggle for that. Like I do think the depth of talent, probably due to the portal, has really, really helped here. My biggest storylines moving forward is, does Terrence Shannon get himself back into that first team? Does he knock out Store? If it's Walker, does he knock out his own teammate, Domask?
Does he knock out Domask? Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a big one for me. And then the coaches usually are going to go with guys like Coleman and Rick Mast and all that. I'm wondering, like, does the media get Rick Mast, Coleman Hawkins, Barnheiser, the love that I think they deserve over some guys who are putting up numbers but on not very good teams? So that's what I'm always interested to see is how much some of these media actually watch a lot of these games. I try to have a Big Ten game on every night just so I just so I know what's happening and I get to see these guys in action. But I know that's hard for a lot of people. So I think there's going to be a long honorable mention list. Like, I'm interested to see, like, this honorable mention list could be longer than it usually goes because you need usually two votes to get honorable mention. So I think it's going to be a lot longer. There could be 10, 15 guys on that list this year.
Yeah. No, I agree. And it reminds me of the AP poll because people go crazy about, you know,
a loss that week, right?
This AP voter put this team here, and it's those AP voters. And I'm not saying this as a slight to AP voters. There is no way you can watch all 25 of those teams throughout the course of the week.
Oh, I would hate to be an AP voter. Yeah, I would absolutely hate, like, the guys who are in the studio watching all these games. Those are the ones who should be voting for it because they watch all these games. I don't have time to do that. No, I'm covering one team.
Yeah, then you have, you know, probably some AP voters, and again, no slight to them because I know they can't watch all those games, you know, putting together their poll and going, okay, what did this team do this week? Oh, they were 2-0. Okay, or what did this team do? Oh, they just dropped their last game. And I think there's probably going to be some of that by the end of the Big Ten season where it's like, what were this guy's numbers? Like, that's why a Kanye Cleary could sneak onto the third team. That's why, you know, a Dawson Garcia could be a second team. You know, it's just those things happen. But, you know, you hope that the people that have watched the majority of the conference are the ones that kind of absorb most of those votes, but it doesn't typically work out that way.
I was trying to think of the guys I don't have on this list that I had in my all Big Ten preseason, which was top 10. Julian Reese, we didn't put on here. I had AJ Hogard on my list. I love him, but, like, they just don't have the shooting around him that they did, you know, with Hauser last year. And then Cliff Omori is not on that list because Rutgers is so bad and doesn't have much around. He just hasn't gotten a lot better. He's a really good player, and he's good at what he does. He just hasn't gotten a lot better.
And with Cliff and Reese, I mean, if Maryland is 8-3 right now, is Reese more of a conversation on third team? Absolutely. If Rutgers is somewhere in the top half of the Big Ten, does Cliff sneak on there? I mean, a lot of it comes down to, or it should come down to your team's success as well.
All right, Mike, that was a fun exercise. It wasn't easy, but it was fun to talk through that stuff. I appreciate you as always, man. We'll catch up next week.
Yeah, man. Sounds good.
Great stuff from Michael Tulip. Always appreciate his time. If you want more from Mike, he breaks down the video in our Michael Tulip's film room. He breaks down the final 4 minutes, what happened during that game that forced that game in overtime. And Mike points out some ways that game could have potentially been lost before even hit overtime. So we dive into that. Go check that out. If you're a VIP member, I'm telling you, VIP access is worth it just for Michael Tulip and Jay Lehman's film rooms. I've been saying that on and on. But if you don't believe me, now is a great time to sign up because we have 60% off sale going on through Wednesday night. It's more than $70 in savings if you're not a VIP member already. I'm working on my 2025 Illini Football Recruiting Big Board. We'll break that down. We'll have that coming out on Wednesday as signing day is here for 2024. Signing day in February is just not the same anymore. With the transfer portal, there's an urgency by a lot of these high school prospects to sign during December, and that early signing period is just, that's taken over. It feels like almost 80-90% of Division I, but even more at the Power 4 level. It seems like 95% of those prospects are signed by December, but it's a good time to kind of turn the page to the class of 2025, which Illinois has obviously started, and I'll have a big breakdown of that at Illini Inquirer, so you can check that out on the VIP side of things. Thank you, as always, for listening to the Illini Inquirer podcast. Give us a follow, rating, review wherever you get your podcasts. You can check out most of our podcasts on YouTube as well if you prefer that method. I love listening to my podcast on YouTube, so if you want to check it out that way, you can see that on our YouTube channel, Illini Inquirer, and hit the subscribe button, hit the notifications bell, the like button. We appreciate all the support on that side of things as well. Everybody have a great day. Take care of each other. We'll talk to you next time right here on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Bye, everybody.
Hey, Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.